Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Morbid early and ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Hey guys, I have to tell you about this all-in-one shake that I'm freaking loving. It's called Cachava. I love saying it. It's actually hands down the best thing that I've found to help me get all my essential nutrients into one day. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics. In other words, literally everything that your body craves to feel your best. And I know what you're thinking. Something that good for me cannot possibly taste good. Wrong. That's where Cachava really earns their over 52,000 five-star reviews. It actually tastes freaking amazing. It's very creamy and smooth, and it comes together with just water. And it comes in five delicious flavors. Personally, vanilla and chai are my personal favorites, but it also comes in chocolate, matcha, and coconut acai, which I still need to try. Some people like to drink it as part of a healthy breakfast or lunch, and other people love it as a protein-packed snack before or after a workout. It's really perfect for that because it has 25 grams of plant protein per serving. Personally, I like to add mine to my overnight oats. I add a scoop and I mix it all up to get a little more protein into my oats. And literally, I can have that for breakfast and feel satiated, nourished, beautiful, functioning, all throughout my day. It's incredible. Please send me more of it because I love it so much. It makes me feel very, very good. And guess what, guys? Cachava is offering our listeners 10% off for a limited time. Just go to cachava.com/morbid, spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/morbid. It was almost the perfect crime. Stacks of cold, hard cash sitting on the table, unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal? A pile of Monopoly money from the banker. Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out our most devious selves, and Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic that you can play anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties, bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault, even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Go download it now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hey, weirdos. I'm Alina.
I'm Ash.
And this is Morbid.
It's morbid in the morning.
It is, but it's one of those that I'm not sure why I kept for the morning because it's not going to start your day out.
Oh.
On a great note.
Fantastic.
This is a pretty gnarly one.
That makes me nervous because my tum already hurts.
I know, you're having tummy troubles.
I know.
What's going on?
I don't know. I think there's just like random shit going around in the universe.
Yeah, maybe. You know, we saw Corinne and Sabrina from Two Girls, One Ghost recently. We had a little brekkie with them.
That was so fun.
I love them so much. And Corinne had a shirt on that said, what was the shirt? And you were like, wow.
I was like, wow, that's relatable. It said something like, my tummy really hurts, but I'm being brave.
I need to get you that so fast.
That's how my tummy right hurts, now.
But I'm being really brave about it.
That's how I feel right now.
It was hilarious. That's very much a you shirt.
I got in my car this morning. I'm like, my tummy really hurts, but I'm being brave.
But I'm being really brave about it.
I'm going to drive over and I'll be right there.
Oh, I love it so much. Also, if you haven't listened to Two Girls, One Ghost, like, what are you doing? Them. It's a fun, spooky ass time. And they're wonderful.
They're so
definitely
funny.
Go listen to them. But yeah, so Ash's tummy hurts, but she's being really brave about it.
Thank you.
So there's that. I keep finding, and I was saying this morning to Ash, that I'm in this phase of life where I can't stay up. After the girls go to sleep, I sit on the couch and I just pass out.
Yeah.
And it's been happening for like weeks and I'm like, why can't I stay awake?
See, it's funny to me. It's like, it's very concerning to Alina. She's like, I don't like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I hate it.
It's so funny to me because that's been me for like the past like
6 months to a year. I go home, I turn on a TV show, and 5 minutes into that TV show, I'm just like,
and I'm out. See, usually I'm like, I can handle like a few hours of sitting and like doing something else at night. But now it's as soon as I sit on that couch, I'm out.
We're doing a lot, man.
It's not great. I don't love falling asleep like that. I got to figure out. You know what it is?
It's here a blanket. It is.
Hello. I figured it out. No, it's I'm not doing anything physically for my body right now. Like I've taken a hiatus from like doing any kind of physical activity with my body.
Oh, see, that's not the problem for me.
And I think that's a problem for me because okay. I think when I exercise,
you feel
like
better.
When I do the bike or something and I'm on like a good routine with it, I feel like it like energizes me.
Okay.
In a way that I don't think is happening right now. So maybe I think I stopped when I got like sick at one point. I was like, oh, I gotta take a break.
Yeah.
And then I just didn't do it again. I've been meaning to.
Do it, girl.
I gotta do it. Because I think it helps.
We got walking treads for our desks.
Yeah. So I think it's necessary. I need some physical activity.
Yeah, walk a mile in these Louboutins.
Exactly, in these Louboutins.
Yeah, that's Iggy.
Are you walking in Louboutins?
No, not me.
I was like,
but
where?
Iggy is. No, I'm just walking a
but
mile.
Iggy is. No, I think it really is like part of it at least. Maybe. I'm hoping that physical activity will make me, I think it will make me feel better as like,
well, yes.
In general.
So but I don't know, that. You might still fall asleep early.
Maybe, but maybe I'll feel better about
well,
it.
Well, also you're not giving yourself enough credit. You have two brand new puppies.
That's true. I think that's definitely having to do with it. They're doing great, by the way.
Yeah, but like you learned how to, or not you, like your youngest learned how to sleep. So yep. Then you were sleeping for a minute. And your body was probably getting used to that. And then you were like, oh, you know what's a good idea? Let's fuck this up entirely.
Let's fuck
and
up
get
my
two
sleep.
Dogs. And that's probably what happened. So you're probably, people get tired sometimes.
I know. It's wild. I don't love it.
Listen, all you Capricorns out there, you might feel this sudden feeling that you've never felt before called tired.
It sucks.
Lay down.
All my Capricorns can attest, like it's, we don't like it.
Just lay down for a
we
minute.
Don't like it because it's not conducive to productivity, and that really annoys me.
What about a 20-minute nap? That's like super good for productivity. Maybe you should start doing that during the day. Maybe it's time for you to develop a nap time, oldie.
Maybe you gotta have a nap time.
Maybe it's time for your nap.
It's time for my nap, everybody.
I'll wake you up with some oatmeal. With some cream of wheat.
Some cream of wheat.
I used to live with this lady that loved that. Cream of wheat.
You know, it's a real food. So,
it's so fucking gross.
I don't know what else to say about
You're
it.
Like, you know what? Cream of wheat exists.
It's that you can eat it. So
I don't know if you should.
You can. I don't know if you should. But why don't we get into this terrible, terrible case that will probably keep me from sleeping even further?
Oh, fantastic. Let's do that.
This one is wild. Someone suggested it. A few people suggested it. And I was like, and when I saw them suggest it, I was like, I'm sorry, what? Because they were like, can you do the Bone Breaker case?
They didn't
and I
say
said,
that.
What? Excuse me? And then I looked it up and I said, what? Excuse me? I didn't know this existed.
Oh, no.
And this is real rough. So let's begin July 10th, 1994. We got a 90s case.
It's the 90s.
This is when the body of 14-year-old Steiner was found floating in the Wisconsin River. He was discovered after a nearly week-long desperate search for him, who had mysteriously disappeared seemingly into thin air from his parents' home in Baraboo, Wisconsin. His cause of death was officially labeled as death by drowning, and the theory police were going with was that he snuck out of his house by his own volition that night to go swimming with friends.
Doubt it.
They ruled it was just a tragic accident.
Yeah,
there was no,
sure.
According to them, there was no other evidence to prove anything else. But was it an accident?
No.
Or was this the beginning of a case that has torn my entire nervous system to shreds?
The latter.
That's literally what I wrote in my notes.
Oh my
I wrote,
God.
It was the latter.
I am a psychic.
You are. We are one. So let's begin with Chris Steiner's death, because this is so tragic.
Mm.
Reading about his parents just ruined my whole heart.
I feel like with a case like this, and any case in general where somebody loses like a teenager in their life, that's horrible.
And in the middle of the night.
Right.
He was in his home. And then he just wasn't.
Right.
And then they found him floating in a river a week later. And they had no answers. Like, at first, this was just an accidental drowning. And his parents never believed that.
Well, because parents know.
They just know, but they had to wait like a long time to figure out what actually happened to him, and it's terrible. Even worse. So on the morning of July 4th, 1994, Kathy Steiner, Chris's mom, went to wake up her son, 14-year-old Christian, known as Chris Steiner, who would have been asleep in his bedroom at this point. So she went in his room, she opened up the door, and she found that the room was empty. Now, Chris was supposed to work a 7 a.m. shift at McDonald's that morning, so alarm bells immediately went off because he had just started that job, and he was excited about that job, so he wouldn't have just bailed. So Kathy informed her husband, George, that Chris wasn't in his bed, and together they searched the house. During the search, they found that the window screens in their other son's bedroom had been sliced.
Ooh, I don't like that.
Yeah, and both the front and back doors to the house were unlocked.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and there was no sign of Chris anywhere. So they immediately called the police to report him missing. But imagine this, whatever happened, this person came through their other child's bedroom into this child's bedroom. Like, no, how do you wrap your brain around that?
Fucked.
Now, according to George and Kathy, they had last seen Chris around 10 p.m. the night before. He said his father had gone in to check on him in his bedroom, and he was in there.
Yeah.
And he said, quote, he had fallen asleep on his bed wearing the clothes he had on that day. And Kathy was like, that was very usual, especially since Chris had worked a long shift at McDonald's that evening. So, and it was his first day on the new job. So he was like, he was exhausted.
Yeah.
So he just passed out on his bed in his clothes. We just let him do it. Whatever. Now, initially, George Steiner suspected that the window screen to the first floor bedroom had possibly been cut by one of Chris's friends, because he was thinking they convinced him to sneak out of the house to go swimming.
Okay.
So I think they were hopeful that this was just some like really shitty decision making by his friends.
Right.
And when police checked with Chris's friends, though, they all were like, yeah, no, like we did not see Chris last night. And none of them had even seen him that night. And they were like, we definitely didn't go to the house. They had like things that they, I don't think all of them had like rock solid alibis, but I think they were like, we were home.
Right.
So now they ruled out the potential for his having simply snuck out, because it just wasn't looking like that was it. And investigators kind of shifted their focus to maybe not somebody intruded into the house and came and got him, but instead Chris must have run away.
Because it's the 90s. The screen on his way out.
Yeah, it's the 90s and he's a teenager. Of course he ran away. Now, and it was so common at the time. It still is. Every once in a while you'll hear something where they're like, they probably just ran away. And it's like, how often does that happen?
Yeah, I don't think that many people are running away.
Yeah. But even the detectives working this case were having a little trouble believing that themselves, because they were like, it just doesn't fit with any of this. Like you said, the sliced screen was weird. And they said that one of them said, quote, he was believed to be a runaway, but there's not been any sign of him in a few days. That's what I think it's Sauk. Is it S-A-U-K County?
Yeah, Sauk County.
Sauk, right? Sauk County Sheriff's Detective Mary Ward had said that to the press, that there was just no sign of him since then.
Yeah.
And that didn't really add up, because it's like, if he ran away, you would hear from him, or someone would have.
Yeah.
Like, where's he running to?
That's
that
the thing.
No one hears from him.
Like, he probably, like, if that was the case, would have hitchhiked with somebody or stopped.
Or gone to stay with someone.
Yeah.
Like, where is he staying?
Right.
And according to his parents, they said he had never run away before, and they couldn't think of any reason that he would before or now. And they said there was no stressful events, no triggers that could really have set him off. Everything was pretty normal. He had just started a new job.
Yeah.
He had just vanished. So like I mentioned before, the day he'd gone missing, Chris had started that new job at McDonald's, and he was working with his older brother, Jim.
Oh.
And he was super excited about being out of school because it was summertime, and he was looking forward to earning all this money at his first job. Like, this was a very exciting thing for him.
Totally.
And Kathy Steiner told reporters, quote, he even had it figured out how much he was going to make working Sundays and holidays. At the time, he had just finished eighth grade and was eager to start high school.
Thank God. Just finished eighth grade.
Just finished eighth grade.
That's awful.
A child.
Yes.
And when you look up pictures of him, he's so cute.
Aww.
And friends and family worked closely with detectives. They were very forthcoming with any information. Nobody seemed to be holding back anything or being shady.
Well, that's good.
And they all spent a week. All his friends and family were posting missing flyers around Baraboo and the surrounding counties. The police were on it. They were doing tons of searches. And George and Kathy Steiner were speaking to every media outlet that they could get their faces in front of.
I can't imagine how hard that would be.
That is, my brain can't even wrap around that, because to have to talk about it and beg people, like, they were literally saying, like, if you have any information, please come forward. Like, if you know where our son is, like, just begging for help.
To have to do that.
And unfortunately, the search came to an end on July 10th. That's when Chris's body was found floating in the Wisconsin River by two jet skiers. According to Sheriff James Smith, quote, the body was quite decomposed when it was found. And investigators actually had to use dental records to identify him.
Oh, my God.
Because remember, this is July, and he'd been in the water for a week.
Yeah.
So the autopsy was conducted the following day, and the pathologist on the case was Dr. Robert Huntington. And he speculated that Chris's body had been in the water at least 2 days, but probably longer. He determined that the cause of death was probably drowning, but he said the advanced decomposition from being in the water made it kind of difficult to determine if anything else had happened. So detectives knew where the body was discovered, but where it went into the water, where it went into the water, was something that they weren't sure. It was still a mystery, because it could have floated a long way.
That's the thing, yeah. That's what's tough when it's, like, water.
Yeah, and it's like, so they couldn't tell where he went into the water, and they couldn't tell if he had gone into the water already dead. They couldn't tell where the drowning had occurred, nothing like that.
Oh, man.
And there didn't appear at the time to be any signs of physical trauma, like bruising or cuts. So they looked at it and said, this seems like an accidental drowning, unfortunately. There was really only minor abrasions, but they said that could have been from being in the water.
Okay.
So given there was no sign of struggle in the home, I don't know why they're ignoring that sliced screen.
I was like, that seems struggly
to me. No apparent trauma to Chris's body. The sheriff's office started operating on the assumption that Steiner and his friends were out partying and were too afraid to come forward with any information.
That's nice. Which doubt everyone involved. Great.
Also, these are like 14-year-old boys and girls that you're being like, I think you're just too scared to admit that you got him killed. And it's like,
yeah, like what?
And they're all like, we were not with him. Like, are you kidding? Can you imagine that being put on you at 14? Sheriff's deputies searched the shoreline and the surrounding area. They were hoping to find a campsite, a party spot that they could be like, here it is. This is where he went into the water. But the river had actually risen considerably in the days before he was found. So if there was any evidence of that, it was gone. Now, in the absence of any evidence to prove that anything else but accidental drowning had happened here, the Columbia County Sheriff's Department went with the accidental drowning theory, and the case was closed.
Wow. That's like, pretty quick.
That's it. This was very little comfort to the Steiners, because obviously that it was quick. There was like a lot of, like, it seems like that's probably it. Like, that's not very comforting. And they still had no answers, no real answers. What had happened? They didn't find a spot. They had no one that has admitted that they were out partying with him or that they had come and got him.
And they know their son. They know that's not like him.
Yeah. Like, and they were like, we don't have any answers. All you're telling me is that you're pretty sure that he drowned.
Like, if anything, like, you're just making more confusion.
It's awful. And they were just left to wonder what happened to him.
That's terrible.
And their grief and confusion was made even worse because there was odd evidence left in the house that night that he went missing. There was the slit in the screen, and there was also muddy shoe prints suggesting that someone had to come into the house while everyone was sleeping and Chris had left with whoever it was. But there was a lack of any other mess or struggle evidence, which indicated that he knew whoever had come in and left with them willingly.
Right.
So that was even weirder, that they were like, it seems like somebody else was here. But again.
Oh, that's freaky.
Yeah. Isn't that so spooky?
Yes. And it's also like, why not look further into those footprints?
That's the thing. Who was that?
Right. Like, you would, like, they know Chris's size, and clearly, like, if they're like, no, that wasn't Chris's size, then who did that?
Yeah, and take a look at his shoes. Did he have that kind of shoe with that tread on the bottom? But later,
look a little further.
Yeah. And later, George, his dad, said, quote, "What hurts so much is that, you know, there were other kids with him. Something happened out there. Something terrible happened out there. What we don't understand is how somebody could have left him there without calling."
Oh.
And that's what they were left to think happened, that everybody just left him somewhere.
That's awful.
And George and Kathy Steiner had to bury their son at St. Joseph's Cemetery in Baraboo on July 14th, 1994. More than a year was going to pass before they would get any more information about what actually happened to Chris Steiner.
Oh, God.
Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the best-selling true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu. Are you the kind of person who loves a touch-up on the go, or maybe you're a full glam while in the carpool kind of human? Maybe there's no time for a full face in the morning between kids, pets, work, all of that. Maybe you woke up late. Well, Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation is perfect for those moments when life moves fast. I absolutely love this foundation because it doesn't settle into any fine lines or wrinkles, and you can just toss this thing in your purse. You say, "Oh my gosh, I have a little smudge right here. Let me fix it really quick." It's perfect. And it's now in 16 shades. It offers SPF 20, which, like, that's amazing. It's got moisturizing pro vitamin B5. And I love the applicator. It's a blurring sponge. So you can just tap, tap, tap it to reset your foundation and you are good. Shop Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
So that brings us to July 30th, 1995, a year later. 911 dispatchers in Columbia County received a very scary and unusual call from a panicked teenage boy.
Oh.
He claimed he'd been kidnapped, tortured, and locked in a closet for 2 days by his teenage neighbor, Joe Clark.
What?
Yep. The dispatcher traced the call to a home, and officers arrived at the scene very quickly, only a couple minutes later. Where in this scene was Joe Clark's home, where he shared with his parents.
I was going to say he lives with his parents, yep. Correct?
This is where they discovered 13-year-old Thaddeus Thad Phillips.
Stop.
He was disoriented and suffering from severe dehydration, broken legs, and other bruises and injuries.
Holy shit.
And he had broken out of a closet. Now, first responders rushed him to St. Clair Hospital. He was immediately taken into surgery for the broken legs. They basically had to save his legs. They were so broken.
Wow.
Like, they were so shattered in so many places that they weren't sure they were going to be able to save his legs.
Holy shit. That's, like, on another level. Yeah.
Now, this is, like, a child.
Yeah.
Like, an actual child. Meanwhile, Baraboo police waited for 17-year-old Joe Clark to return home. And when he returned home, they immediately took him into custody without incident.
Who the fuck is this kid?
Oh. So Thad Phillips had a terrifying ordeal. His ordeal had begun 2 days before this, shortly after midnight, on Friday night, July 28th. Thad was watching television with his sister. His 5-year-old sister, by the way.
Oh.
And this was the last time either of his parents saw him before he went to bed.
Oh, my God. This is wild now.
Because this case is like these teenage boys are in their own home.
Right. That's the scariest thing to me.
Like, they're not out. They're not walking down the street. They are in their own fucking homes.
Like, he's hanging out with his 5-year-old sister.
Yeah. Now, at some point, Thad had fallen asleep on the couch with his 5-year-old sister, right? As we just started talking about that. But he was with his 5-year-old sister, too. Like, they both had fallen asleep on the couch.
That's adorable, too.
And he was awoken in the middle of the night. And he thought he was awoken by his parents trying to lead him into his bedroom.
Yeah.
So this was not his parents. This was his teenage neighbor, Joe Clark, who had walked into his fucking house and woken him up on the couch.
What?
He lived like a half a mile down the street from the Phillips house. And Thad couldn't understand that this was him. He was disoriented. He was only half awake. So he didn't really like fight back or question a lot when Clark helped him off the couch and out the door.
Oh, God.
And he had guided him down the street to the Clark house and into his second floor bedroom, Joe's.
What?
Now, at that point, like, he started waking up and was just like, what the fuck is going on? But then Thad's father, Donald Phillips, woke up around 4 a.m. and he went to the living room to make sure the children had gone to sleep in their beds. And he only found his 5-year-old daughter sleeping on the couch and no Thad. And he was like, never would he have left his 5-year-old sister alone sleeping on a couch. No. Like, he never would have done that. He would have carried her into her room.
Of course.
So he was like, what the fuck is going on? And more confusing, his shoes, his sneakers were exactly where he'd left them earlier that evening. So wherever he went barefoot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was like, that was his pair of shoes.
How haunting would that have been?
Yeah. So the Phillips had only recently moved to the area a few months earlier, too.
Oh, my God.
Like a welcome to the neighborhood. And neither Donald nor his wife really felt comfortable going to a lot of the neighbors for help because they didn't know them.
Yeah.
And so, and they were a little, at this point, they were probably concerned. Like, I don't even know these people.
Is it one of them? Right.
Yeah. So they spent the entire morning checking any place they thought Thad could have gone. Like the Columbia County Fair, the Baraboo Swimming Pool. They went to a camping spot at the Baraboo River. And they spent most of the day searching for their son. But when they couldn't find him, Donald Phillips called Baraboo police to report him missing. And at no time during this search did it occur to either of Thad's parents, or anyone else for that matter, that the boy was being held only less than a mile away from their home.
That is unbelievable.
In a teenager's closet.
And the parents had no idea?
Oh, yeah. We'll talk. So by the time they'd arrived in Joe Clark's, the time that he had arrived in Joe Clark's bedroom, Thad was definitely, like I said, more awake and more like, what the fuck's going on? So he was very confused about why he was being brought there in the middle of the night. And Thad had seen Clark in the neighborhood. They've never really spoken.
Oh, like he was like, stranger.
I've seen you, but like, what the fuck is going on? And they had a 4-year age difference. Okay. So like, they never really would have hung out or been friends anyways. But Clark told Thad he just wanted to hang out. And that's why he had brought him to his house.
That's why I abducted you. I just want to hang out.
Thad accepted the explanation. I think it was probably because he was so out of it.
Yeah.
But after a very short period of time, he was like, I would like to go home. Like,
it's like 3 a.m.
And to be honest, he might have accepted the explanation, in my opinion, because he was like, you're terrifying.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And I'm not going to flip out here. I'm just going to be like, cool, let's hang out.
That's
like,
exactly what I thought when you said that.
But he was like, I would like to go home. And this is when Clark lost it.
Oh, no.
He shoved Thad to the bed and began attacking him. And months later, Joe Clark told a judge he'd blinked out.
Oh, okay.
And didn't remember what happened after he pushed him onto the bed.
I bet.
And he said when he woke up, he said that Thad was belly aching about his legs.
What?
Which Joe Clark is such a manipulative piece of shit.
Sounds like it.
Like, I love my favorite excuse for these fuckers is always, I blacked out.
I don't remember.
So wild that you just blacked out.
Like, no, that doesn't happen.
Yeah. You went out of your way to break into this boy's house and steal him off the couch next to his 5-year-old sister.
And then you just blacked out.
You didn't mean to hurt him though. Like, nothing was going to occur. Like, you're an idiot. Now, according to the report filed with the Sauk? That's really hard to say.
It's probably Sauk.
Sauk. Yeah. I think that's probably more like it. Sauk County Sheriff. Yeah, that makes more sense. Mm. Sheriff's Department. Once Thad was on the bed, Joe Clark. This is really graphic, by the way. I just want to point this out.
Fantastic.
If you don't like bones and breaking bones.
Oh, I don't. Can I go?
I mean, hopefully the name of the thing kind of made you stay away if that's something you don't want to listen to. But Joe Clark grabbed him by his left ankle and began twisting until the bones in his ankle broke.
Goodbye.
Over the next 2 days, Clark subjected Thad Phillips to brutal outbursts of violence. And that included Joe repeatedly jumping on his legs, causing fractures to both femur bones.
Holy shit.
Femur bones.
Femur is so thick, Ika.
Yeah.
How, like, is Joe a big kid or no?
That's the thing. He's like not a massive kid.
No.
But it's like, it was just the rage and violence that he had.
I'm like, now, where the fuck are your parents?
He also caused knee fractures and dislocation, ankle fractures and dislocation, and tibial fractures in both lower legs. So he broke his femur bones on both legs and his tibia on both legs.
Knee things freaking me out.
Like, every part of both of his legs was shattered.
That is absolutely insane.
Months later, Dr. Michael Plute, who was the surgeon who performed Thad's first two surgeries, said to the sheriff's department that, quote, the force used to break Thad's bones was equivalent of Thad having been in a car accident.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And there was more injuries on top of that. Like, he had contusions, he had abrasions, and he was also severely dehydrated because he wouldn't eat or drink anything during the time because he was scared that Clark was going to poison him.
Yeah, I would think the same thing.
Now, when he wasn't physically torturing Thad and breaking his bones, Clark was taking immense pleasure in psychologically tormenting him. Joe told Thad, quote, he was fascinated by busting people's bones.
What?
And that he had done this to at least two other boys. One of whom, he said, was Chris Steiner.
And did Thad know
Chris Steiner? And Chris, he was like, I know that name.
Like, he'd heard of him.
Yeah.
Oh.
And at one point, he said, quote, Clark had exposed himself. This is very upsetting, by the way. He had exposed himself and proceeded to masturbate in front of Thad and placed a pillow over Thad's face to smother him, though it's unclear whether he was doing this in an attempt to kill him.
What the fuck is wrong with this kid?
What you find out is that, like, this kid, Joe Clark, and he's not a kid and 17.
No, he's an animal.
He's a fucking monster. He literally got off on suffering, like watching someone suffer. Like, he's a straight up monster.
Oh my God. Yeah.
On Sunday, July 30th, Joe had to leave the house. So he carried Thad's body, like, broken body. And you know this guy wasn't carrying him in a nice way. So this guy, this poor kid, Thad, has two shattered legs from the waist down. They're just broken.
He must have been in, like, complete shock.
Oh, I can't imagine the pain.
And, like,
I can't even imagine. And he had carried him to a closet in his bedroom, and after binding Thad's legs with a bandage, he locked him in there.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
This is, like, oh my God, this is, like, unimaginable.
It really is. This the fact that somebody could do this, but a 17-year-old?
Like, this sounds like a movie that I would never watch.
And one that you would be like, that's insane.
That, like because no that. Way. Exactly. Yeah. That's why I wouldn't want to watch it.
Yeah. And so Thad is in the closet with two broken legs. He's been psychologically and physically tortured.
Is dehydrated. For 2 days,
dehydrated as hell. And he sees a guitar in the closet and he's like, well, this is my only chance. So he uses the guitar to break a hole through the door.
Oh my God.
Like, bust through the door. How this kid had any strength to do that, I have no idea. And he was able to unlock it. He dragged himself down the stairs with two broken legs.
What?
And you know his legs were banging on every step along the way.
Oh my God, stop it.
He found a telephone and he called 911.
Holy shit.
And by the way, no parents around at this point.
Thank you. That was my next question. Yeah.
The Phillips family were relieved that Thad had been found and they raced to St. Clair Hospital. But they found that doctors were now trying to put several rods and pins and stabilizers in Thad's legs, which they were like, what the fuck? Poor like, what thing. Do you mean? And Donald Phillips told investigators that he'd never seen Joe Clark before. Donald is the father. And he said, as far as he knew, Clark wasn't friends with his son. He was like, I don't know who this kid is.
Right.
Like, I've never seen him. And at the time, Phillips was like, this must be some kind of like one-time freak attack. Like, what the hell is this? Like, right. Everybody was just like, he must have snapped. Like, what is going
Because they hadn't
on?
Seen anything like this.
And they hadn't so heard they Thad say, hey, he said he did this to Chris Steiner.
Oh, shit.
Now, while doctors went to work on saving Thad's legs, again, they had to work to save them. They were thinking they were going to have to amputate both of his legs.
I can't imagine, like, what shape he was in.
Oh, my God.
And it looks like he, like, played sports and stuff. He's a little cutie.
And he's and mentally... What his state was in, I can't even imagine.
He probably had to, like, learn how to walk again.
Because he was, like, awful. He would, like, berate him and scream at him. He would, like, say awful things. And then he's standing over him, like, masturbating while he's suffering.
That's so fucked up.
That
the trauma.
How do you get past that?
That's like layers and layers and layers of trauma.
Well, sheriff's deputies transported Joe Clark to a juvenile detention center, and they sat down for an interview, which I'm sure was a terrifying
fucking
interview.
Wild.
Now, at no time during the arrest, interviews, or trial did Joe Clark really become forthcoming or honest with anybody.
I'm not surprised.
And initially, Clark was held on kidnapping charges, obviously, which gave detectives a little more time to investigate other potential charges.
Mm.
And according to Clark, he'd seen Thad in the yard a couple of times on previous occasions and went to the Phillips house after midnight on the 29th after seeing the Phillips car is absent from their house.
The fuck?
Yeah. So he's an actual predator.
He's like a stalker.
Like he was watching Thad Phillips in his own fucking yard on several occasions, then waits for it to look like his parents aren't home. Steals him off the fucking couch. This guy had no idea. I mean, I know he's doing much worse things, but it's like he had no idea if the parents were home or not. And he's just leaving his 5-year-old sister on the couch.
Yeah.
Has no.
Oh, doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, he doesn't give a shit.
If you have the audacity to walk into somebody's home like that, you don't care about anything.
He said when he showed up at the house at midnight, the door was unlocked. And so Clark just let himself in the house. Yeah, it's definitely your house now. And he found Thad sleeping on the couch with his 5-year-old sister. And he said he, quote, assisted him off the couch.
Oh, yeah. You're so great. Thank you.
And then he said he walked/carried him into his house.
Like now, abducted, I think. Yeah, is what
I think I believe that's the word you're searching for. Now, beyond that, he said that he, again, blinked out and doesn't remember anything that happened. But 2 days, doesn't remember a damn thing. Now, based on Thad's report that Clark, because now he had said, hey, by the way, because he was with it enough to say, by the way, he said he did this to Chris Steiner. Sheriff's investigators in Columbia County reopened their investigation into Chris Steiner's death and were very eager to find out what Joe Clark knew. So when Steiner's body was discovered in the Wisconsin River that previous year, again, he had been in the water for nearly a week and it was the decomposition was considerable.
Mm.
That's why it made that autopsy so difficult.
Because your bones deteriorate too.
Well, it's like, they don't deteriorate, but it's like, it's tough to figure out what is post-mortem injury and what is perimortem, pre-mortem. Like there's no, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard, especially in a river like that when it can, you can slam into things and break bones. I'm a little confused why broken bones weren't discovered here. Noted from what but I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just saying to me, I'm a little.
And a full autopsy had been done previously?
So that's confusing to me.
That is.
But that's just me.
That's weird.
That's weird.
That's suspicious.
That is a little weird. So Steiner's body was actually exhumed and re-examined for this.
I was thinking that.
And it was x-rayed this time, which I'm like, it wasn't x-rayed before?
Yeah, weird.
But I imagine that's probably because they went in with a pretty preconceived notion that he had accidentally drowned and had left his house on his own volition.
Yeah, so perhaps it wasn't quite a full autopsy.
So this is a good lesson for not going into something like this with a preconceived narrative of what went down.
Right, like that's kind of your whole job not to do that.
So they did the x-ray and after an x-ray, the coroner reported that Steiner had indeed suffered broken knees and broken ankles, very similar to the injuries that Thad Phillips had.
Holy shit.
And the findings of the second autopsy and their implications came as no surprise to Kathy Steiner, Chris Steiner's mom.
Right.
She had always suspected Clark.
What?
Yep.
Why?
She said, quote, he was the last one to talk to Chris that night. And she said he wanted him to go somewhere with him, but Chris refused. He also knew that Chris's brother was not going to be home that night.
Oh,
which,
shit.
Which, like, Kathy.
Kathy knew.
Kathy fucking knew.
And that's why he broke in through the brother's room, because he knew he wasn't going to be there.
Because he figured the brother wasn't going to be there that night.
Oh my God. This kid, like, he did, what's the BTK thing that he said he would do?
He would, like, troll.
That's,
I think
this
he called
kid
it.
Is fucking trolling neighborhoods.
It's true. He's like, oh, it's so disgusting. And according to Kathy, Joe Clark had been hanging around her son a lot in the days before he disappeared. And she said that Clark was, quote, very domineering and said he, quote, hung around younger boys because he could bully them.
Ew.
So he's a disgusting predator.
Yeah, he's a fucking
is what he
weirdo.
Is. As the coroner's office conducted their second autopsy of Chris Steiner's body, investigators served a search warrant at the Clark home in Fairfield, Wisconsin. Among the evidence seized in the search was, quote, a 48 by 40 inch plywood board with, quote unquote, satanic writing.
Yeah, totally.
An illustration scribbled on it. A film canister, quote, with possible marijuana seeds. Remember, it's the 90s.
Yes.
A leg brace and a body brace. Several horror films on VHS, which, by the way, Dave found out which horror films were,
oh,
like,
shoot,
among
which
those.
Ones were they?
And I love it because Dave, when he wrote this to me, was like, these are the films that were found. So, among other things, Jill Clark had terrible taste in horror movies. It was Witchcraft.
Okay.
Which is, I don't know which year. There's a few Witchcraft movies, but none of them look like they're pretty awesome. One, I want you to look this one up, guys.
Okay.
Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things.
Oh, what the fuck?
It looks, if you look at the IMDb page for that, it has like a little trailer for it or some little clip. It looks ridiculous. And so weird.
Ew. Even the cover, I'm like, what? Yeah.
And he also had Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So he's not killing it in the horror game here.
Definitely not.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Guys, I am obsessed with Astapro and you should be too, because seasonal allergies are a freaking bummer. They make me feel like crud. They make me sneeze. They make my boogies all yucca, and it's just really kind of gross. But Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter OTC allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Have you tried Astapro, Elena? Because I'm obsessed.
I have, and it's so fast!
It's so fast! Astapro, it's faster, bro. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. It's faster, bro. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. In 2015, HBO's The Jinx unraveled one of the most notorious unsolved crimes in New York's history, exposing long-buried information discovered during the filmmaker's decades-long investigation of Robert Durst, scion of New York's billionaire real estate family. Now, The Jinx is back for part two, where the filmmakers continued investigating for 8 years, uncovering hidden material, Durst prison calls, and interviews with people who had never come forward. If you're looking for more about The Jinx, you can also check out The Jinx podcast. Hosted by director Andrew Jarecki and EP Zach Stewart Pontier, the podcast will begin with an episode-by-episode look back of part one, featuring never-before-heard audio between Durst and Jarecki, along with insights from the series' creators. Then the podcast will cover The Jinx part two as the series releases on Max. Watch the HBO original documentary series The Jinx part two, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Jinx podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
So that was found. There was also, and this is the most chilling to me, they found several sketches of house interiors in the area.
What?
Mm-hmm.
No. That's like some Angelus level motherfucking creep shit.
Bringing it to the rewatcher. They.
What?
Sketches of house interiors.
That's on a different, like, what the fuck?
And it's like,
was he sitting there fucking drawing people's houses?
That's the thing.
In their house?
And it's like, or was he, to me, I'm like, was he going around the outside of people's houses at night and like peeking in and like getting the layout that way?
Right.
Before going in?
Probably.
Like, what
so
the
he could
fuck?
Go back home and study it and say like, oh, I'm going to go in
I'm
going to
go in this way.
And then
I
I'll
go
leave
through
this
way.
This door usually is unlocked. Like, what the fuck?
Horrifying.
That is so chilling.
Horrifying to me.
Oh.
They found that broken guitar that Thad said he used to get out of there. And they also discovered three lists that were titled Get To Now, Can Wait, and Leg Thing. And each of these lists had several names of local boys in the area.
Oh my God, were they ever told?
I don't know if they were ever told.
I hope they weren't.
But they were literally on, you were either on a list, get like to priority. Now, can wait, or leg thing.
What?
Like what? So he was like predatorily watching young boys in the area and like putting together lists. And then going off of those lists.
This is one of the wildest cases I've ever
heard. It is. And it's like, again.
He's 17.
Where the fuck are the parents? Not even, we're going to find out where they were these 2 days. But where the fuck were you before that? That your kid is drawing sketches of interiors of homes and writing lists of boys in the area, creeping on boys in the area, and you have no idea.
Yeah, like, what are you doing? Like,
you gotta do something here.
Oh my God.
Now, with Clark being relatively young, 17 years old, his crimes being fucking brutal to the point of stunning seasoned investigators, and his history of getting in trouble, there was some pause as to whether the Sauk. I can't fucking say that word. Sauk County Juvenile Justice System was even equipped to handle a case like this because it was also going to attract a lot of public attention and interest. But after 2 days of debate and consideration, Judge Virginia Wolf, which I was like,
what a badass
there
name.
There you go. Ruled that Joseph Clark would be tried as an adult.
Yeah. If he wasn't, I would have been so pissed because that's an adult crime.
That shit is adult, everything that you've done. And on September 7th, 1995, he appeared before a judge in circuit court where he was charged with attempted first-degree intentional homicide, burglary, kidnapping, intentionally causing great bodily harm to a child, mayhem, causing mental harm to a child, and 2 counts of child enticement.
Damn.
If convicted on all counts, he was going to get about 170 years in prison.
I hope he got all of those.
So the waiver of Joe Clark into the adult court meant that the offender's name could be released to the public.
Well,
so, of course, this made people very interested in this case and knowing what the fuck his motives were.
Right.
Like, what is going on here? It's wild. So according to Clark, Joe Clark's father, Ron Clark, we're getting into the parents now, Joe was in a motorcycle accident in May of 1993, the year earlier, in which, quote, he was thrown 30 to 40 feet through the air and landed on his head. And he said, potentially causing some brain trauma. And his father said that maybe he had kind of snapped. He was a real hot-tempered after that. Now, the
that
following
is interesting.
Year.
Oh, there's more. Sure is. I could, her face. There's more, y'all.
So the following year, things took another really difficult turn for Joe Clark, according to his parents.
Okay.
He had gotten into this car, this motorcycle accident. And the following year, Chris Steiner was found dead. Apparently, kids at school immediately and regularly taunted him about the death, saying that he had done it.
Yeah, he did.
So kids at school knew he had done it.
What the fuck?
They didn't know. Like, they didn't have the evidence. He didn't admit it to them. But they were like, this fucker did it.
Wow. He must have been, like, I can't imagine being like, oh, yeah, like, that was definitely my fellow classmate that tortured that boy to death.
He for sure did it.
Like, what?
Yeah. And his father said to reporters, I even heard with my own ears a girl come up to him in the parking lot at school and say to him, did you kill Chris Steiner?
Well.
And I want to say, parents, does that concern you at all? That his entire peer group believes that he killed one of their own.
Like, what is making them think that?
Like, I know kids can be fucked. I understand that. But maybe sit him down and be like, why are they saying this?
Like, yeah, because
why would they say
some kind of reason behind that?
Talk to him.
Yeah.
Why are you not talking to him? Why are you just going, wow, fuck, that's crazy.
That's wild. That's real
fucked up. Like, sit down with your fucking child and go, why does your entire school think you killed this boy?
Right.
Because if this is just like a witch hunt here, which is what they describe it as later.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Then we need to do something about it. But like, if this is based off of things you have done or said, then you need help, my boy.
Right.
Like, that should be the discussion.
Like, let's get you some help.
We need to get you some help. Even if you are falsely admitting to this or alluding to that you did it, you need to get help, and we are here to help you.
Exactly.
They did none of that. So during her testimony in the Phillips trial, Joe's mother, Bertha Clark, said to the jury that Joe was genuinely distraught over Steiner's death, and it caused a noticeable change to him. But she said, but what I think is when she says he was genuinely distraught, I think what she means is he was trying to act distraught.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you're forgetting that he did it.
Right. Like you're letting
Let's
go
not
of
say
that
he
whole
was
fact.
Genuinely feeling any kind of feelings about that, because it's like, no, he brutally tortured this child
to death.
So no. And she said, Joey was hurt because his friend had died and people were trying to blame him for it. Could you imagine how that would make him feel?
But Bertha, girl, he did it.
I'm sorry, girl, what?
So they didn't believe that he did it.
No. And also, it's like, I'm sorry, can you imagine how it makes Chris Steiner's parents feel?
Right.
To know that your child, your 17-year-old child,
abducted him and murdered him from his home,
from his bed, in his bedroom, dragged him to this house and tortured him for God knows how long.
I'd also be like, hey, Bertha, what do you think about all the fucking images he has sketched of your neighbor's
the interiors
homes?
Of people's houses?
What do you think about that?
What about the lists
of boys' names?
Like that doesn't concern you at all? Like, we're not going to touch that?
Let's not put on rose-colored glasses.
Now, according to the parents, the harassment at school became so bad that they had to withdraw him from Baraboo High School. And he was unable to, before he was even able to finish his senior year.
Well, don't murder people and that won't happen
to
you.
And when they pulled him out of school, they said he worked a few entry-level farm jobs. He had some stints as a cook and dishwasher at a local restaurant, which
That's horrifying.
But Joe's parents also came under a little scrutiny after this.
One would think.
Because they were trying to figure out, everybody's trying to figure out what the fuck is an explanation for this kid's violent antisocial behavior here.
And how the fuck did this happen in your home and you had no idea?
Exactly. Now, on the evening that Thad was abducted from his home, the Clarks were visiting their daughter in nearby Portage, and they weren't planning to return until the following day. So they had left Joe alone in the house for most of the weekend. His father did say to reporters, and again, he's 17, so like leaving him alone is not a felony here.
No, that's not crazy at all.
His father told reporters, we called Friday night, so it's not like we were out of touch with him.
Yeah.
So that's fine. Yeah. Whatever. I'm not worried about that.
No, me either.
But according to investigators who conducted the initial search of the Clark home, the house was in a state of big disarray when they arrived. The kitchen was strewn with beer bottles, and when they looked in Joe's personal journal, which was taken into evidence,
sure,
he details his parents' extreme alcoholism.
Oh.
And he's at one point he says, Mom and Dad are downstairs getting drunk again. I don't like admitting it, not even in my journal.
That's sad.
It is sad. Now, according to Joe, his mother drank routinely. During an interview, she drank routinely and intensely to the point of passing out all the time.
Wow.
She said that's not true. She had never drank to the point of passing out. That's not true. And, of course, the press and public at this point are hearing all this stuff, and they're speculating on Clark's possible motive and the circumstances that led him to become this. But they were going to have to wait for the actual trial to get any real sight into his psychology, and they were going to get it.
Oh, God.
So, initially, Joe Clark's trial for the crimes against Thad Phillips were going to begin in early September. And it was going to be presented in two parts. The first was going to be basically to determine, did he commit these crimes? And the second was going to say, did he do so because of, quote, mental defect or disease? Mm. So insanity. But when he appeared before a circuit court judge on September 5th, 1996, Joe pleaded no contest to the charges against him.
Interesting.
So the guilt and innocence phase was moot now. They didn't need it. Now all they had to do was determine whether he was mentally incapacitated when he abducted, tortured, and attempted to kill Thad Phillips. So the trial to determine his competency began September 16th, 1996. During this time, his defense attorney, Mark Frank, presented the case for insanity. Frank's case really rested largely on that head trauma thing and the potential brain injury suffered when he was thrown from, I think it was a dirt bike more than a motorcycle in 1993. According to medical records, he suffered a blood clot above the covering of the brain, not below it, which made a quick recovery after surgery. But since the accident, Frank told the jury that Joe Clark, quote, has had and continues to have an abnormal condition of the mind. Now, according to Frank, the defense attorney, the injuries that he got from the accident required treatments, including having arteries to the brain cauterized, which could affect mental processes. He called several witnesses who also gave testimony saying that there were dramatic changes in his behavior and in the years since the accident. He had hallucinations. psychotic behavior, suicidal impulses, delusions, social impairment, and personality.
Wow.
These are all, none of them are experts. They're all just people.
Oh, okay.
So unfortunately for the defense, under cross-examination, several of these witnesses were a little less effective than they were when they had been initially
presented by the defense.
Joe's mother, Bertha, for example, and this part annoys me how they went about this, because I think there was just a better way to go about it, but that's just me.
Okay.
Bertha had to walk back a lot of statements about his injuries because she made them seem worse and worse and worse and definitely was like overplaying them.
Sure.
But when prosecutor Pat Barrett came to cross-examine her, they basically said that the woman's eighth grade education could not be expected to understand arcane medical terminology.
Okay, well,
and it's like,
fuck off.
I don't think we need to do that, because I don't care if you have an eighth grade education or what. If it's your child, like, you know what I mean? Like,
you know,
I don't
what's
think,
going on
I don't
them.
Think that's a great way to go about it. I think that's kind of like poking.
Yeah,
like,
it
feels like.
Well, and I think they were treating her that way probably because of what had come
that's
out.
That's the thing. That's just kind of like, ugh. And actually to demonstrate this, they handed her a paperclip and a ruler on the stand and asked her to tell the paperclip size in centimeters.
Okay, so they're humiliating her.
That's the thing. I don't think humiliation is necessary.
No, I don't
in this
either.
Situation.
I don't understand that. Because and it regardless makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's the thing. It makes me uncomfortable. I was like, that's not a good. I wouldn't feel good about that.
No.
Like, it's just, I understand that, like, we're trying to prove that she's really not a great witness.
But, like, you're taking mansplaining to the next level.
Well, and there's very easy, like, we can tell that she is lying and over-exaggerating things and that she is not a great credible witness.
And if you can
tell
that,
without pointing to her education level.
And that's the thing. You're kind of going for like low fruit.
That's what it feels like to me, but whatever. And although she was not an effective witness when it came to describing the physical trauma her son suffered in the accident, she did insist that she'd seen a big change in her son after the accident, which could absolutely be true. She said, "There's something terribly wrong. He needs psychiatric treatment." Mm. Which is like, okay.
Correct.
Did you try to get him any?
Yeah.
The answer is no.
And if you were that concerned, you would have.
Yeah. And Barrett countered this statement by producing a big amount of reports from various school and social service agencies who had all done assessments of Joe in previous years after he had punched another student and threatened to kill a teacher,
among
other things.
So there were warning signs here.
And the reports contradicted the claim that Joe required considerable care after the accident. Totally contradicted it. And also, the fact that he was evaluated for psychological impairments after that as well, and it was
nothing.
An unremarkable report. Like, not at all.
Yeah, so it doesn't look like we're getting this insanity defense.
Exactly. And Barrett pointed out, while Bertha Clark may see a need for psychological treatment now, his parents had at no time tried to get him help before this.
Yeah.
Sitting on the stand and screaming at everybody that he needs help.
Seems convenient.
None of them had even lifted a finger to try to get him help.
It shouldn't take your son murdering or kidnapping another child and holding them hostage to
suddenly
make you
go,
realize
you know what,
that.
He needs help. And it's like, okay, well,
too
and
late.
It's like, sometimes I know it can be hard to get help. But,
of course.
But you didn't even make the effort.
Right. Like,
there's
no
evidence
attempt.
Of them ever making an effort.
That's shitty.
And the problem with the case put together by the defense was that it relied almost exclusively on the testimony of just regular witnesses, like lay
no
witnesses.
Experts.
No expertise to speak on physical, mental, or emotional health of this child before or after the head injury. And none of they had four psychologists evaluate Joe Clark after his arrest, and none of them were willing to support a diminished capacity defense.
So that tells you everything you need to know.
And as if the prosecution's well executed for the most part,
aside from that paperclip humiliation,
their well executed cross examinations of the defense witnesses, as if that wasn't bad enough, Mark Frank's odds of success plummeted even more when Barrett called his first witness, which was Thad Phillips.
Oh shit!
So Phillips detailed the absolutely horrific ordeal for the court. He said, "He grabbed my throat and twisted my right ankle. I could feel it snap."
Oh, my God.
He said, "When I looked down, my foot was on backwards."
Holy shit.
He said, "He pushed my leg up at an angle towards my head. He kept pushing it and pushing it until it broke."
Oh.
He also told the jury early on in the ordeal he had asked Clark if he had ever done this before, and Clark responded saying, "Do you know Chris Steiner?"
Wow.
And according to Thad, Joe Clark also told him that there was an unnamed boy he had paralyzed.
What the fuck?
Yep. And the boy's testimony was so, like, heart-wrenching and compelling that everybody was just, like, silent.
I believe it.
Like, people were crying. Like, it was just awful. And at one point, he became too emotional. And he said he can't. He was like, "Please, can I stop talking about this?"
Of course.
And they did. Recess was granted.
Good.
Now, among the last and maybe the most important witnesses to be called by the prosecution was well-known forensic psychiatrist Park Dietz. He had actually testified in the Jeffrey Dahmer case, the Ted Kaczynski case, and Betty Broderick.
Ah.
Now, according to Dietz, Joe Clark, quote, is a serial sexual sadist who takes pleasure in breaking his victims' legs. But his antisocial personality disorder is not a legal defense to his crimes. Dietz said Clark is faking his amnesia and falsely claiming every kind of hallucination known to man in order to avoid responsibility for his crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, as evidence of deviant pathology, he said that Clark wrapped Thad's legs in ace bandages and put three pairs of white gym socks on his feet before masturbating in front of him.
Ew, what the fuck?
And he said, quote, Clark's fetish for gym socks, which he took from the Phillips home before abducting the boy. And the fact that he masturbated in front of the injured victim showed he was aroused by making people suffer.
That's so, so gross.
Yeah. Now, the following day, September 18th, and that was, like, damning. That was real damning.
Yeah, he stole gym socks from the house?
Yeah.
That's on another level. Yeah. This whole thing is on another level.
It's really ick. The jury deliberated for just 1 hour before unanimously rejecting the defense's claim that Joe Clark was suffering from any kind of mental incapacity when he kidnapped and tortured Thad Phillips. The verdict really wasn't a shock to anyone in the courtroom. An observing attorney in the courtroom that day actually said he had sympathy for Mark Frank, the defense team. He said, it was, quote, a dog case, but somebody had to take it.
Mm.
So basically they're all like, yeah, you're not winning this one.
Right.
Moments after the verdict was read, Thad Phillips was smiling and hugging Pat Barrett, and he was very happy with the outcome of the trial, he told reporters. At the sentencing hearing on November 14th, Joe Clark was sentenced to 100 years in prison for the kidnapping and assault of Thad Phillips.
Bye.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Now, in October 1997, a civil court judge ruled in favor of Thad Phillips and ordered Joe Clark to pay $31,566 in medical damages, $6 million in compensatory damages, and $21 million in damages to the victim.
Holy shiitake mushrooms.
Clark had no money at the time.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, 17.
And he's in prison. He's unlikely to really earn anything.
So how did he get that payout?
The judge ruled that she was going to allow him to make money from the case so that he could pay this.
Okay.
She said, given the sensational nature of this case, it is entirely possible that the defendant could reap some financial gain through media coverage in the future.
Okay.
So and she was like, and it's going to go to them.
Thad must have been okay with that. And I guess like his family.
Now on to the murder trial.
Yes,
we have only done
the
Thad Phillips trial. So some of the most important parts of this was that they needed to connect Joe Clark to the murder in 1994 of Chris Steiner. And Clark had been among the small number of potential suspects that had been interviewed following the discovery of Steiner's body.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and Steiner's parents had strongly suspected him of involvement in the death, like, from the beginning. So investigators pretty much were like, okay, we got our guy. And their suspicions only grew when, following Clark's arrest the previous year, a second autopsy of Steiner's body had shown those injuries that were so similar to Thad. And then Thad's testimony that Clark had just admitted to him that he killed Chris Steiner. That was really the last piece of evidence that they needed. So less than a week after the verdict was read in the case against Clark for the attack on Phillips, Columbia County District Attorney Mark Bennett announced that he was going to be filing criminal charges against Joe Clark for the murder of Chris Steiner. In a press conference a day later, he cited the testimony collected during the Phillips investigation and the subsequent trial, but saying, "We feel those statements are very relevant, but we do have other evidence, some included in the complaint and some not included."
Okay.
So after the press conference, Ron and Bertha Clark, Joe Clark's parents, they spoke out against the Columbia County District Attorney's Office. They accused investigators of misrepresenting the facts of the case. And they said, quote, "We're talking about two kids who got in a fight. The police made up the rest of the story."
I don't think that's what we're talking about. I think we're talking about one kid that went home after killing the other and putting him in a river.
It's like,
I think we're talking about different things here, Bertha.
Your son
and Joe
abducted and tortured somebody and was like convicted of it.
Like, is sitting in prison as we speak.
Like, I don't know how you deny it when this kid called 911 from your fucking house. How do you deny this?
That's just, like, what?
He didn't go down the street and call and be like, it was at that house. He was in your fucking house, and you have a broken closet door to prove that he broke out of it.
It goes beyond denial.
Like, you can't. That's ridiculous. Like, are you kidding me right now? And now you're going to say that they're railroading him when he admitted to killing this other kid in the exact fucking same way?
Like, yeah, it sucks that your son is a murderer.
But you got to come to terms here.
Exactly. Because you're disrespecting another family by
that's
saying
the thing.
It has, like,
several other families. It's like, come on. They thought their son was being unfairly accused of murder. And they said that he's only being accused because he was seen with Chris the day he disappeared. And it's like, no.
He's being accused because he said he did it.
And Ron said that's the charges they wanted to bring in the first place. Thad Phillips was just a way to get there.
Phillips was in your home, dude.
You mean the fact that your son, like, absolutely abducted, tortured, and tried to kill Thad Phillips in your home? That was just a convenient way for them to get him on murder charges.
I don't understand how these people can't, like...
That's the thing. I understand that I can't even fathom how hard it is to come to terms or grips with your child being this fucking level of a monster.
Don't speak again, like...
But it's like, you can't.
No.
You're sounding wild
and you're
right now.
Disrespectful,
saying that they were just trying to pin this on him. Are you saying that the entire thing was set up? Like, Thad's bones are broken because they just wanted to get a murder conviction on this random kid?
Like, I don't understand.
Like, no. So the preliminary hearing was to be held in early October, and Thad Phillips was going to be the state's main witness in the case. Although they had other evidence, his testimony was really going to be, that was already known to the public,
right.
And it was pretty much key to prosecuting the case. But a few days before the hearing was to begin, Thad Phillips got into an argument with another boy, which resulted in the boy shooting Thad in the shoulder.
Oh, my God.
According to the shooter, named Michael, Thad and a friend had threatened to kill him and were entering his home without permission, so he shot Phillips in the back.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, nobody did. Apparently, Thad recovered by the following month, and in early November, Joe was formally charged with 3 criminal counts, including first-degree intentional homicide of Chris Steiner. But that was, like, a what?
Was Thad in trouble?
I don't think he was in trouble.
Huh.
Because he was the one that was shot.
But I was wondering if, like,
I don't
the
think
person
they had,
was
like,
telling the truth. Damn.
I don't think they had a lot of, like, evidence to the contrary, but woof.
What a life.
I was just going to say, like, Jesus. Like you are very young to be having all this stuff happen. Now, the trial began on November 4th, 1997, with Kathy and George Steiner being the first of a lot of witnesses called. In their testimonies, both parents told the jury how they discovered their son was missing, the frantic search that followed, and then them finding out that Chris's body was found in the river. Kathy Steiner told the jury about the argument her son had had with Joe Clark that afternoon.
Oh, right. I forgot about
that. And the significance of which was compounded by Thad Phillips' testimony, in which he detailed the extent of his own ordeal and Clark's confession to the murder of Steiner. So they had everything they needed. Now, there was a lot of overlap between the two cases, obviously. And the Steiner murder case kind of unfolded pretty much the same as the Phillips case did. A lot of the same evidence, many of the same witnesses. And this time, however, Ron and Bertha Clark attempted to provide an alibi for Joe. They told the jury Joe was asleep in his bed on July 3rd, 1994, the night that Steiner was believed to have been abducted.
And you're just telling us this now? How convenient.
Well, and the prosecutor quickly challenged that. They confronted Bertha with the photographs of empty beer cans in the house that being in such disarray, as well as Joe's journal where he repeatedly wrote about his parents drinking and how they were always passed out, they were always incapacitated. And basically they said, if this was indicative of a pattern, we really can't trust your alibi.
True.
And it's the truth.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point of this is to, discredit the witness.
Of course.
Now, after several days of testimony, the jury sided with the prosecution and he was found guilty for the first degree murder of Chris Steiner.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, he was brought before Judge James Evanson for sentencing. Evanson called Clark a mean, sadistic killer and noted that the evidence was overwhelming in proving Clark's guilt, despite his continued statements of innocence. Before passing his sentence, Judge Evanson asked whether Joe Clark had anything to say to the court. And he said, I've done nothing wrong. You're condemning an innocent person. Done nothing wrong?
Totally.
Okay.
Hey, look at that over there.
Yeah. He was just in your house with broken legs. Yeah.
Wanted to break through your closet for funsies.
Luckily, Joe Clark was sentenced to 110 years in prison for the murder of Chris Steiner.
Wow.
Which he had to serve concurrently with his 100-year sentence he was already serving for the abduction and attack on Thad Phillips.
210 years.
He will have to serve at least 70 years of his sentence before even being eligible for parole.
Good.
Now, outside the courthouse, his parents said the sentence was basically bullshit, and they called the trial a witch hunt.
Yes,
for sure. A witch hunt. Like, what? It's not like he's this innocent boy that they plucked out of nowhere. There was a boy in your house.
Yeah.
Calling 911 with broken legs, saying that this kid had abducted him from his house.
I can't with these people.
Ugh. And they accused the authorities of conspiring against their son.
Why would they do that?
It's only a bunch of circumstantial evidence, testimony from a bunch of kids they dragged in here from jail to tell stories.
I don't know. I think it's based on a bit more than that.
All right. Doesn't change the fact that he's in jail for 270 years. So in the fall of 1998, Joe Clark did appeal the ruling in the Phillips case.
I figured.
And apparently challenging the factual basis for his convictions on the homicide, mayhem, and mental harm charges. Excuse me?
What?
The petition said that Clark had been wrongfully convicted of mayhem. This blows my mind. Because mayhem is defined as an act committed by one who, with intent to disable or disfigure another, cuts or mutilates the tongue, eye, ear, nose, lip, limb, or other bodily member of another. So Joe's lawyer said, well, due to advances in science and medicine, Thad Phillips didn't suffer any permanent damage.
Oh, my God.
So his client could not be guilty of mayhem as it's defined by the law.
Oh, my God.
I gotta ask, sir, how the fuck do you sleep at night? Like, you go home and you put your fucking head on a pillow? Like, damn.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I know, defense attorneys
have
a very hard job. Some of the hardest jobs. And I know you gotta do what you gotta do. But in this situation, I'm like,
there's a line.
I'd be like, dude, that's not something I'm willing to do.
I'm not stamping my name on
that. You gotta give this one up. Like, you gotta let this one go. To be saying that due to medical advances, Thad didn't suffer any permanent damage.
Like, how about permanent mental damage? Are you fucking joking?
And you're literally saying, well, if it was like way back when and this happened, sure, he could be, it would be mayhem. But because we're smarter now and technology has advanced, we can't do that.
Also, he has, like, rods and shit in his legs. Yeah, that's not permanent damage.
Oh, it just blew my mind.
If my leg is no longer just my leg, that's damage.
Luckily, the court justices disagreed with that argument, and they upheld the original finding.
Imagine the back offices, when they got that. They were like, whoa.
They were like, wow, shoot for the stars, I guess, my guy.
How's that reach?
They said, we do not see anything in either the historical notion of mayhem or its current placement in the statutory scheme, which would require a victim's disablement or disfigurement to be permanent. It is reasonable to infer that Clark knew that these injuries would disable his victim from escaping, especially in light of Clark's additional threat to paralyze the victim if he tried to leave the house.
Yeah.
Therefore, the trial court's findings of a factual basis for mayhem was clearly not erroneous. Now, additional challenges were made to the attempted murder and mental harm to a child charges.
oh shit.
Which I'm like, you gotta stop.
Yeah, like, where is the line?
And they were trying to do it the same way, with the strict interpretation of the law.
Like, looking for a loophole, essentially.
And these arguments were very unpersuasive. All of them were upheld, which is like, you are really going after mental harm to a child charge based on strict interpretation of that law?
I would never.
Like dude. I don't get. There was a second appeal that was filed in March 1999, and it argued that several pieces of evidence in the Steiner murder case, specifically Thad's testimony and the list of names discovered on those lists and the investigations, they lacked merit.
What?
And the verdict should be reversed.
I don't think so.
Essentially, what the petition argues is that because these pieces of evidence were from a separate trial, from the Thad Phillips trial.
From a separate trial?
They should not have been allowed to be used in the murder trial. And the justices were like, no.
But like, these two events correlate, they my said, guy.
The trial court properly exercised its discretion in determining that the evidence was relevant for purposes of motive, plan, intent, and identity, and in determining that its probative value was not outweighed by unfair prejudice. After reviewing all the evidence, the ruling was upheld.
Yeah.
So Joe Clark is going to be in jail forever and ever and ever.
Forever and always.
And
then there's just like no info on if he paralyzed a boy.
That one just went away. Because I looked everywhere for that. They could not find what that was.
So maybe
about.
He was just shit talking.
So he could have just been shit talking, or he did it to someone who was in, you know, a bad position and wouldn't be
able to come forward.
Yeah.
Damn. Wow, that was something.
That was a really intense case. Very upsetting.
I feel so bad for...
In a lot of ways.
Chris Steiner's family and Thad.
Yeah. And now Chris Steiner's family now knows what he went through before he died. And it's like, that's even worse.
Absolutely.
Like, it's like they have... It's closure is such a weird word we always say, but they have that closure of knowing what happened now instead of just wondering what happened. Right. But my God... At what cost? Like that.
I know.
Knowing that that's what happened, I don't know.
I wonder how they feel about knowing
that. I hope they're okay.
I hope they are too.
I hope
Thad's okay.
I know. I hope Thad's doing great. And honestly, like, wow, that was a lot.
I hope Joe Clark's parents got it together at some point.
I honestly do. I hope they got it together. I hope they were able to accept the truth. What had happened.
Yeah.
And move forward.
And stop denying.
Hopefully, healthily.
Yeah.
Like, hopefully you got it together. And,
yeah.
You know, but. Oof.
That's a sad story all around.
It's an awful, awful, awful case.
Damn, where was that again?
Wisconsin.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You guys are just supposed to be known for cheese,
I know. What are you doing?
Calm down.
Calm down over there.
Well, thanks for listening.
Yeah.
And we hope you
keep
it
weird.
Whoa. But not so weird that you forget to say weird at the end of your own show. And I don't think you should ever keep it as weird as Joe Clark did, because or else you'll be in prison for 200 and forever years.
Yeah, don't keep it that weird at all.
But like, love you so much.
Bye.
If you like Morbid, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hey, Morbid, this is Weirdos.
Since Elena betrayed me and didn't go through with our brilliant plan for opening episode 544, The Career Girl Murders Part 1, we thought that we'd get it right with this go-round, as we tell you about one of our favorite deep dives that you might have missed within our feed.
In August 1963, Patricia Tolles returned home from work to find her apartment demolished. Shaken, she contacted one of her roommate's fathers, who stumbled across a truly grisly murder scene.
The media created a narrative that would, to their benefit, sell newspapers.
Every headline set out to make single women feel afraid and deter them from pursuing personal independence, instead of focusing on how people are depraved and that we should stop assholes from being assholes. You can find this episode by following Morbid and scrolling back a little bit to episode 544, The Career Girl Murders, Part 1, or by searching Morbid Career Girls wherever you listen to podcasts.